Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Julie Axelrod. I'm representing Appellant Judicial Watch. The main question here is whether the records sought by Judicial Watch from the Social Security Administration are exempted from FOIA by 26 U.S.C. Section 6103, which exempts tax return information from disclosure. Although Section 6103 is indeed an exempting statute, it does not exempt the records that we seek. What we seek is merely a list of the names of the U.S. employers who've received the largest number of no-match letters from the Social Security.
Can I ask one thing I just really wasn't clear on? Are you asking for a list if the list already exists, or are you asking for the construction of a list?
Well, if a list already exists, certainly we're asking for it. Uh-huh. And if a list is readily reproducible,
when you say reproducible, what do you mean by that?
So if it's basically a matter of a few keystrokes and it's done.
Well, imagine that they don't have a document with a list other than that old one that apparently mm-hmm. is not within your request. They don't yet have one, but they could create one by taking the W-2s. Is that what you're asking them to do?
Yes, if it's easy enough. Obviously, I don't know exactly how hard that would be, and if it's not readily reproducible.
Why doesn't that run up against the Crone case and the Crone citation of Justice White's opinion that FOIA doesn't require the creation of a document, only the production of documents?
So the Crone case is 30 years old.
Yes, but and there's been not everybody who's 30 years old is bad, you know.
I know. So there's been a lot of changes in technology since then. And
changes in technology, but the question is there been a change in the law?
There's the eFOIA amendment.
But all that says is that if you have a document that's paper and it can be turned into an electronic document, you have to produce it in electronic form, but it doesn't say anything about changing the document, or more importantly, it doesn't say anything about creating a list out of a bunch of other documents.
What Bureau, Sample versus Bureau of Prisons and Sladich versus HUD say is that if it's a matter of a computer search and it's just a computer search among documents you have, and it's readily reproducible, then
in Sample, it's just a question of turning a paper document by scanning it into a electronic document. It's not changing the document. It's the difference between your brief that you submitted in paper and your brief on my computer, but there's nothing in Sample about taking data from different documents and creating a third document. What's your best case for that?
But Swadesh versus HUD. I mean,
what happened in what was the document?
So they said a computer search isn't creating a new document.
No, there has to be a search. I agree with that. And actually, that the eFOIA specifically says you have to do an electronic search if you can. But that's the search. That's not the production of the final document. I'm not familiar with Suarez. Is that a case in which they actually had, in the end, produce a compilation of data that wasn't previously in existence?
I'm not exactly sure how, off the top of my head. But
if that's the case, then you might argue that you have to produce the W-2s and delete something from them or something,
but you're definitely not asking
for that. So if it's the case that they don't have to produce the document, new document, then there's nothing left other than the possibility that there is an existing document.
Well,
is that right?
Yeah, they have to search, and if it does exist, then they have to produce it.
Right. So if there is an existing document, that would be the next question, right?
Would be a question.
Right. So, but as to that existing document, what would your list? You're looking for a list of names, is that right?
Yes. Well, names of employers.
And that, you think, comes under the Haskell Amendment?
Yes, because it doesn't need the Haskell Amendment because it's not tax return information in the first place. So Section 6103 defines tax return information.
Why isn't it tax return information? Why isn't it? I know that the briefs have spent an enormous amount of ink on the question of what is a taxpayer identity, but I'd rather talk about the other half of the statute. Any other data received by, recorded by, prepared by, furnished to the Secretary with respect to a return or with respect to the determination or existence of possible existence of liability of any tax. And the name of the employer is on the W-2, right?
But we're not asking for W-2.
But I appreciate that. But the name of the employer is on the W-2. Right? That's where you would get, that's somehow they would get the names of these employers would be, they'd have to look at a W-2, wouldn't they?
Yes, but it's, I mean, I'd say that for, it says definitions for the purposes of this section, a return information means a taxpayer's identity.
No, but it says or, yes, it does say taxpayer identity or any other data, right? That's the rest of the other half of the statute that says, or taxpayer's identity, and then a lot of words, and then it says, or any other data received by the Secretary with respect to the determination of possible liability. And we've held in the landmark case that the names on a document that can be used for liability are covered.
Well, then the names of the person who has tax liability.
No, but not in Landmark. In Landmark, this was just some third party who was asking questions. Right? That was a case about a third party who sent a letter to the IRS and complaining about the nonprofit treatment of certain entities. But that wasn't the name of a tax. That person was a taxpayer, but not a taxpayer in connection with the return at all. And that's the same, why isn't that, I guess I'm asking why doesn't Landmark completely foreclose this argument?
I mean, I think, you know, Landmark doesn't determine who a taxpayer is in relation to return. I mean, we're looking at the statute.
Right, but I'm not looking at that part of the statute. I'm looking at the second part of the statute. That is, return information means a taxpayer's identity, a lot of other things, or any other data received by the Secretary with respect to tax liability. And W-2 is data with respect to tax liability, and we held in Landmark the data includes the name of a taxpayer, even if that name has nothing to do with the taxpayer's own liability.
Right, so that taxpayer is only the employee.
No, but in
not the employer.
But in Landmark, it didn't make any difference. Right? In Landmark, it was just the name of people who sent in letters complaining about tax treatment of other people, not of themselves.
But it's about their tax treatment. So
not about,
it's not about their tax treatment at all.
About whether they the tax that they're paying. It's
no,
it's not about.
To do with that in Landmark.
Is it about their employees' tax treatment?
No.
It was just people complaining that certain nonprofits were really not nonprofits and should have been taxed.
But that's about their own tax. I mean, a corporation is a tax.
No, but it's
in its own self.
It was about an organization like your own, which was upset about the way in which other organizations were acting with respect to the IRS. It happened to be individuals rather than an organization. But
The W-2, the no match letters are really not about tax at all. I mean, I think that's the difference. I mean, no match letters are about somebody's employees. It's not about how much tax they owe or the tax treatment they're getting or tax in any way. It's about whether their employee has a Social Security number that matches or not.
Social Security number on a W-2 is certainly tax return information.
It is, but the employer isn't. Any information about that employee himself or herself is tax return information on a W-2, but his employer is not. It's not, you know, it's not listed in this
what
very exhaustive
takes
list.
Takes it out from under the language of B-2.
The fact that it's not in there anywhere, and it says a taxpayer's identity.
But Garland just read you the passage that it appears to be directly in. Data received by, recorded by, prepared by, furnished to the secretary with respect to a return, et cetera, et cetera.
I mean, it's all about data about the employee and what,
well, that's not what
he
says.
Collects.
It doesn't confine it to data about, at least about in the narrow sense, the filing person. It's data about the filing person in the sense of revealing his or her employer.
I mean, I think it's, you know, I think it's just his employer doesn't belong in the list of things that are all about himself. I mean, his employer is not, it's clear a person has an employer that's not so abstract. You know, it could have easily included employer, a taxpayer's identity, the nature of his source information, his employer.
It's true of every statute. When it gives a long and comprehensive list, it could have included some individual things which are clearly covered by the general terms, but it didn't identify specifically. But the question is, why is the employer's name not included in this broad general category?
I mean, I think it's not included because it doesn't belong with the other things listed, which are all about his financial situation, his nature, the source of his income, the tax liabilities, receipts.
Right, but we passed that question in the Landmark case. In the Landmark case, that was exactly the argument made by Landmark. And the court held that because the statute refers to a taxpayer's identity or any other data, the court concluded that other data could include names, since the beginning of the statute says a taxpayer's identity or any other data. So you make an argument that not at all unreasonable if we didn't have Landmark, but Landmark addressed and resolved that question.
I mean, I felt like Landmark didn't determine who a taxpayer was. Like, it was, if you consider a taxpayer to be an employer or an employee, it would be the employer's name, but only the name of the person paying taxes in Landmark. I thought you could interpret Landmark as only the person paying taxes is the taxpayer, and any identifying information about that taxpayer is covered, but any identifying information about someone other than that taxpayer is not. And who the taxpayer is wasn't determined by Landmark. I mean, who the taxpayer, I think, is very easy from a common sense meaning. Whoever taxpayer in respect to a return is the person who owes taxes on the return. And so any data about him, any data, anything that relates to him whatsoever that reveals information about that taxpayer, his name, his identity, his numbers, his what he owes, what he doesn't owe, his net worth, all of it.
If on somebody's 1040 return, under Schedule B, you have to list the names of corporations that pay you stock, you know, that pay you dividends. They are not the taxpayer on the return. Are you saying that you could ask for a 1040 with everything blacked out except for the names of the corporations paying the dividends?
No.
Why not?
I mean, because that is, again, information about this taxpayer's income and his receipts and his, you know, source of income.
Right, but so here the employer is the source of income of a taxpayer. So why isn't that other data?
As I said, I mean, I think if you look at it, it doesn't seem like a reasonable, it could easily have been included among that. It's a very exhaustive list. And if you're going to say the source of the income and, you know, employer.
How about if you want a list of how many different taxpayers contribute to a particular charity?
I would say no, because
How's that different?
That would be information about the taxpayers themselves. I mean, this list is about employers. We don't even know.
Employers pay taxes too, right? The employers are taxpayers.
Right, and we couldn't ask for their tax returns, mm-hmm. of course. Right. Anything, you know, they are a taxpayer,
it wouldn't reveal
but that doesn't mean they're.
It wouldn't reveal anything about the taxpayers in the hypothetical of trying to figure out how many different taxpayers contribute to the charity. It would only reveal the number. 500 people contribute to this particular charity, 20 people contribute to that. Why is that different?
How many taxpayers contribute? Well, for one thing, it's asking for a specific number, and we're not asking for any specific number, which is why the Haskell Amendment applies. I mean, what the Haskell Amendment said was basically, if you're taking data from tax information and manipulating it, and you're separating it from a taxpayer, like, and you're not getting specific information.
The taxpayer is not the charity in the hypothetical. The taxpayer is the individual.
But so this would be a closer case, but since you're still asking for a direct number, it would be closer to the taxpayers than this. So we're not asking for how many taxpayers the employees have that don't match. We're just asking for how many letters compared to other employers. So it's very statistical in the sense that it's several steps removed from any actual information about anyone. We're not even asking.
Yeah, but if we open that door, there are lots of, you'll be here in the next case.
Well, I mean, I think you can limit it there by saying it's got to be several steps removed. You can't ask for any hard numbers.
There's so much statistical data you could mine from tax information that wouldn't reveal necessarily identities that still would be within, as Judge Garland and Williams were saying, within the any other data.
I think the Haskell
Amendment. You start us down a pretty, let's say, a road not intended by Congress, at least from what we can understand from the text of the statute. And
I think the Haskell Amendment was saying you can mine data, and you can still, things are still public if, you know, things that you get, and you can mine data, get a statistical compilation.
Is this
and as long as
what you want in the end is it just a list of names? Is that right?
Yes.
So how does this come under the and those names are names of taxpayers?
No, they're names of taxpayers' employers.
Yeah,
well, no, but the stat now, yeah, correct, and the statute, that provision, the Haskell Amendment says that the term return information does not include data in a form which can be associated with or otherwise identify directly or indirectly a particular taxpayer. Now we're no longer talking about the taxpayer who sent in the return or anything. It's just a particular taxpayer. And these are certainly particular taxpayers.
Well, I would say they're not. I mean, I'd say this is the heart of the case, whether an employer is a taxpayer under, you know, 6103B2A. And so that Haskell Amendment is talking about this taxpayer here and, it, you know,
no,
the
but,
taxpayer's identity.
But I appreciate that the distribution of A's and B's is a little complicated in this statute. But this is the Haskell Amendment is not part of A, nor B, nor C, nor D. It's just part of two definitions.
I mean,
of
I think
information.
It illuminates what 6103 was
but
meant to
But it is a
do.
Different term. It no longer talks about a taxpayer's identity. It now talks about a particular taxpayer, and it doesn't talk about anything about the submission of a return or anything. It just says such a term does not include data in a form which cannot be associated with or otherwise identified directly or indirectly a particular taxpayer.
I think 6103 was about protecting people. The Haskell Amendment makes it clear that 6103 was about protecting people who submit returns from having information about themselves individualized.
Landmark we clearly construed it as going further. I'm sorry, not Haskell, but we certainly the total picture of the 6103 as protecting people in a capacity not as taxpayer.
As employers?
No, it wasn't as employer either.
I don't know if you have an, as an employer, I don't know that you have any...
It was really just as officious intermeddlers.
As an employer, I don't know that you have any privacy right in the tax forms of your employees. You know, I mean, what they can do.
What about gift, I'm sorry to interrupt. Gift taxes where a different taxpayer, a different person may be revealed from whom or to whom a gift was made or received. Is that, that's not the taxpayer himself or herself, it's some other person.
Maybe what kind of statistical information, like what kind of ranking are you thinking of? Because obviously...
It's up to your imagination to figure out what kind of gift.
If it's one specific person, then no. I mean,
and your theory is that unless it's about the specific person filing, it's not covered.
What if you asked for a list of the 100 largest people that either President Obama or Governor Romney gave gifts to? A list of those people. Recipients of gifts do not pay taxes. So would this mean the IRS would have to look at all of Governor Romney's tax returns and all of President Obama's tax returns and make a list?
That doesn't sound like it's something like it is readily reproducible. I don't know that they send out letters saying,
well,
know,
everybody,
to,
I mean,
it, you know, first
gift tax forms have to be filed over $10,000 of the gift. So yes, it would. You wouldn't catch the small gifts, but you would catch every gift over $10,000 that either of the two men gave, and every recipient. And say you only asked for over the last 2 years, you want to know the biggest recipients of gifts from those two candidates.
Well, I mean, we wouldn't just ask if these no match letters didn't exist, if something weren't being done to the data besides taxes, we wouldn't be asking. I mean, where, you know, their match letters, as I said, have nothing to do with taxes. And so if they're, I mean, I'd say no, but if there were some sort of program by which you got a letter saying you got a gift, you know, Social Security now had a program that said, okay, you've gotten a gift from somebody. And we asked then for, you know, congratulations, you've got a gift from Barack Obama. And then we asked who got the most letters saying, congratulations, you've got a gift from Barack Obama, then, you know, or who got the most without any specifics, then that would be more comparable to what we're asking.
Another step removed.
Right. It would be one more step removed. So that maybe yes, but what you actually said, no.
Okay. Other questions? Okay, thank you. We'll hear from the government.
Good morning, Your Honor. Jane Lyons on behalf of the Social Security Administration. And I'd like to emphasize that point because I am not here today on behalf of the Internal Revenue Service, an entirely different agency. But I'd like to start with the idea that has come up here that the W-2, excuse me, the IRS form W-2 is somehow not connected to tax returns. Of course it is. Employers, in the first instance, file the form W-2 with the Social Security Administration.
Can I just go back to why... Does the IRS disagree with you or something?
No,
why are you disclaiming the IRS?
Yes. I was puzzled at that.
I think I'm afraid of being asked tax questions, honestly.
Okay.
I'm not a tax lawyer.
It's one executive branch.
Yes, yes.
One Treasury Department, as far as I know.
I think the argument has gotten off onto some tax issues and tax return issues.
I see.
And the import of this case is about the data on W-2 forms that is in the possession of the, that's all I wish to convey. That and I'm not a tax lawyer.
I won't ask you about your 1040.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. I won't ask about yours either.
And I thank you for that.
This notion of identifying who the taxpayer is from the W-2 is obviously something we've now spent quite a bit of time talking about. It's not, but I would like to draw the court's attention to the portion of the language in the statute that Judge Garland has been quoting and that, unfortunately, the district court judge in its decision left out. It left out the very key words in 26 U.S. Code Section 6103B2A, which are the part about the data, any other data that is received, recorded, prepared, furnished, or collected by the secretary with respect to a return or with respect to the determination of existence or possible existence of liability or amount thereof of any person. So that clearly encompasses any person who is related to this tax information.
So you want us to decide on that theory, not the district court's theory?
The theories are the same. The district court is correct.
They're not the same. They're different. Different parts of the statute. And you just said, I think, that the district court didn't quote this part of the statute, which I understand it's all one statute, but you think the any other data is stronger than the way the district court framed it?
I think the two work in unison.
Okay.
I absolutely 100%.
Well, I think they work in unison, and I think that a taxpayer's identity actually means the person filing the return. Does that mean you lose the case? Or do you think maybe they work independently?
You have a backup, I assume.
I think yes. I think my backup then would be that we win on your ground, which is the fee.
Because I am concerned the phrase, when it says the term return information means a taxpayer's identity.
Comma.
I understand. But if that were it, the nature and source of his income, payments, receipts, deductions, etc., that would sound like the person filing the return information. But the other part, or any other data received in connection with respect to any person, that's a good argument for you. But if you're telling me that the first half and the second half of the clause are the same, and they mean the same, and it's got to be the same taxpayer, then I'm going to have a little difficulty.
No, they don't mean the same thing. They reinforce the same idea, which is that the concept of return information coming off a W-2 covers both the employer and the employee. That's all.
Okay.
The employee, the individual employee in the first part, and the employer in the second part. Okay, so I think we're good on that. And the employer is obviously, as the district court pointed out, a taxpayer as well. The reality is that for the Social Security Administration to create a list of any employers bearing any particular characteristic, it has to manipulate the data that it has off these W-2s, and the manipulation of that information that leads to a list is... our case law makes clear that removing some of the identifying information and blacking out parts of it does not change the fundamental character of all of the information as return information.
Your position on whether this kind of information is covered by FOIA at all, in the sense of if it would have to be created? You seemed a little bit ambiguous on that question, if I'm reading the brief correctly.
The footnote. Yes. The reality is that the Social Security Administration correctly responded in this case by denying the request without doing any search. And as the declarations of Charles Lips in the record make clear, the effort that needs to be undertaken to create the kind of list that Judicial Watch seeks takes at least 80 hours.
Why does that make
any
difference? That goes to the question of searching for it.
But
I thought the government's position is that documents do not have to be created. Now, in this case, but for this statute, they could say, okay, just give us all the W-2s of the employees, and we'll make our own list. And usually the government says, no, we'll make a list for you. But in this case, your answer is, well, that you can't do that because that would reveal return information. But isn't the government's basic position that FOIA doesn't require the making of lists at all, and that's only a convenience that the government will provide if it doesn't want to turn over the actual documents?
That's a secondary argument. Because the list contains return information, I think that's just the shorter distance between the two points.
Well, it's a shorter distance, so you don't want to make the list at all?
We shouldn't have to do anything because all of the information sought is return information exempt
from
disclosure. I'm asking,
you shouldn't have to do anything because you don't have to do anything. Isn't that a shorter distance between the two points? That is, in the Sears case, the Supreme Court said The government does not have to create new documents. It right. only has to produce documents it has. So it does not have to create any lists. Period. Regardless of whether it's return information or not return information, you just don't have to produce any list.
And they didn't ask for the W-2s.
They did not ask for the W-2s.
So that's why isn't that the end of the case? They didn't ask for the W-2s, and you're not required to create information.
But if we decided on that ground, then they would file a request immediately the next day asking for the W-2s.
Which would also be immediately denied because their return information covered by 60.
Yes, but so that's the issue you want to win on, assuming you can win it all.
Right.
I
Hence
like
the ambiguous footnote, probably.
The ambiguity in the footnote is entirely of my responsibility. The electronic amendments to FOIA and the law are catching up with each other. The reality is, in the computer age, this data exists, and it is possible for the agency to take data out. If this request were different, let's say, if we're not this particular FOIA request, let's say it was a FOIA request for all the employers whose EIN number begins with 4, mm-hmm. or whose first letter begins with K. Mm-hmm. That is data that could be pulled out of a system fairly readily by Social Security.
And
what
do you think you would be? Let's make it even simpler. Let's say you're the U.S. Geographical Survey, and they ask you for a list of the 10 highest mountains in the world. Okay? And you can obviously do that because you're an agency that's got the heights of every mountain in the world. But you don't have that list. But you have no exemption. There's no exemption for this. Do you have to create a list, even though you, assuming you could easily do that by manipulating other documents on your computer?
No, but you would have to make a reasonable search of record systems likely to contain the information
to
see if you had the list.
Yes, I understand. You're thinking of a different question than I am. Okay.
I don't have to apologize.
It's an interesting question, but not the one I'm asking.
I also think Google could answer this question very quickly, but.
Yes, that's a possible point, but their data is not all perfect.
Well, people argue about the government's data being perfect.
Have you tried Google Maps lately? Now, just to go out again on my hypothetical, you're the Geological Survey, and you receive this request, and they say, we want a list of the top 10, and you say, no. FOIA doesn't require us to make it a list. Is that correct? Just at that level, is that correct?
Yes. And okay. At that point, the agency has to document.
Well, we've searched and there's no list. We don't have a list. Now, a different request. All documents from which we could derive the 10 tallest mountains in the world. We're not asking you to make a list. We're looking for all the documents. Or, if the government prefers, it can give us a list. Right? Mm-hmm. So under that condition, you would have to give there's probably in some atlas somewhere that they have the height of every mountain, and you could rip out those 10 pages, or you could just give them a list. That would be also correct, right?
Well,
unless there's some exemption for the 10 atlas pages, you'd have to produce them.
Yes, in the theory of the National Geological
Survey
bunch. There might be, within that universe of responsive documents, FOIA exemptions that would apply for other reasons.
Yeah, I'm not asking you to defend another government agency. You don't even want to defend the IRS. Okay.
We'll be here on Tuesday defending the IRS.
Now, speaking of the Social Security Administration, what do we do with this Davis case, and what was the government's position in Davis?
In the Davis case, that was dealing with a different set of a different record system, and had to do with the Social Security number verification system. And that was the data that was at issue in that case. And that is quite distinct from the data here, which is from the wage reporting and income. So there's no...
Why was the government's position that the Social Security information in that case was not tax information? Why was that? How is that different than this case?
Because Social Security, administration information, the agency's own information, and not that which sort of passes through it on the way to the IRS, is not it's not within the definition of return information, for one thing. I mean, if the request came in for Social Security numbers,
this says notice. This is based on notices from the Social Security Administration to the employers that Social Security numbers on their wage reports, which has to be a W-2, do not match the corresponding employee's name, date of birth, and or sex. That's information that the SSA obtained from a W-2, isn't it? I'm reading the first paragraph, the second paragraph of the Davis opinion.
Of the Davis case?
Yeah.
It's ambiguous, Your Honor. I understand from my talking to the people at the agency that the change in position there was that it was really, I don't think the reported decision is accurate in the sense that it confuses these two systems. The Social Security Administration has a system by which employers can enter Social Security numbers that are provided by their employees to see if there's a match. And that's the system that this data was dealing with.
It's a match with a W-2.
Yes, but it's a Social Security Act database and separate record system.
You don't want to argue that doesn't make any difference because we're not going to give you Chevron deference anyway?
On whether?
On the meaning of return information. We're not going to give you any deference anyway.
Oh, of course not.
So, well, so why does it matter?
Maybe why skip more deference, maybe.
Well, that's only if you're persuasive. and that's only if we need it, right?
True.
If we think it's clear the meaning of the statute, doesn't
Chevron
make any...
Chevron step one, we're done. And that's where I believe we are in this case.
Okay.
I see that my time is up. There.
Not yet. You've got another minute and 20 if you want us to come. But I think we're done. Is
we're
that
done.
Right? Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. In fact, we'll give the minute and 20 to the other side. And we will allow Judicial Watch to take the minute and 20.
Thank you. So one response I have is that, you know, all this talk about whether they have to create a document sort of presupposes they've searched and it doesn't already exist. I mean, they've said they haven't searched because they don't have to because it's exempt. Well, I would say, you know, like Oglesby, for instance, is a case where you can see that you search first, then you apply the exemption. And if it's exempt, you don't produce, but you still search. So what they're saying is they're exempt, so they don't have to search at all. And also, they don't have to create it because it doesn't exist.
If you know from the statute that the material being sought is exempt, what would you search for?
We would search for whatever is responsive, and then you'd take whatever is responsive.
What on earth would be the purpose of that?
So that you can describe it and says, you know, yes, here it is. This is what it looks like, but you don't get to see it.
Like.
Well, you don't want W-2s. You very clearly, specifically said what you want, right? You want a list of names.
A list of names, yeah.
Right, that's it. So.
But you wanted them relating to a particular period of time.
Yes. Well, I mean, I would say that the public does have an interest in information, whether this list exists even in the first place. I mean, so it's this easy to know who are the top employers who get a lot of no match letters, but, you know, the government doesn't do anything about that information.
I'm sorry, you're saying that assuming, which is important to make, assuming the data described in your request match the data exempt under 6103B, they've still got to search for it to show people that what?
Well, I mean, we get FOIAs all the time where they find us stuff and then they give us a bond index and they say and they describe information and we don't get it.
It usually involves some things that are exempt, some things that aren't, and some things that are close cases and so forth. Here we have one category of information, and if anything's exempt, it's all exempt, right? You weren't asking for...
And we've had searches for information where it's all exempt before.
I think you were saying that you're interested in knowing merely whether there is such a document that exists. In other words, whether the government's compiling such information even...
That's an interest,
exempt.
Too.
But where does FOIA, I don't think FOIA gives the public an interest in knowing whether documents that are exempt exist.
I mean, I think that's what bond indexes do. I mean, I think
congressional hearings are interested in that. I'm not sure.
I mean, I think FOIA is to give the public the ability to see what the government's up to the mm-hmm. largest degree possible within zones of exempted information. Mm-hmm. So, and if you can say, I mean, a lot of, if you can just say from the get-go, look, it's exempt, we don't even have to search, that's a lot less transparency. I mean, it's really easy to claim an exemption a lot of times. I mean, as you say, it's about the next case too. What's the next, what happens when the next case
let me,
is?
Let me just pursue this. Suppose you had asked for the W-2s, all right? W-2s for the top 10 no-match employers. You're saying that the SSA would have to spend God knows how much effort collecting, I guess, making copies of all those W-2s to have them in a pile somewhere and then come to court and make the argument that they're totally exempt?
Well, I suppose they could make a burden argument.
Well, let's assume it's under the whatever ceiling applies for identifying too burdensome.
But we haven't asked for W-2.
But it's still nonsensical, right? That's what I'm getting at.
I think you'd have to say no to that, otherwise.
I think, no, I mean, I think it is not nonsensical to say that an agency has to make a good faith effort for documents that exist, whether or not they're exempt. And I also think, again, this is not an exempt document because the data is so many times removed from the taxpayers. You know, and I think Landmark, it does give a very, very expansive definition of what data is, but it goes back to the taxpayer. It's any data about a taxpayer is on a return is data, but in this case we're not learning anything about a taxpayer because we don't know who these employees are. When we get a list from the Social Security Administration that says these are the people who got the most no match letters, we have no idea who the employees are that they're, or even how many employees they've hired, just that they got a lot of them in comparison to others. So there's just no way to find out anything at all about individual taxpayers. Thus, it's not taxpayer data.
So there is a section of the electronic FOIA that says, in responding under this paragraph to request for records, an agency shall make reasonable efforts to search for the records in electronic form, except when such records, when efforts would significantly interfere with the operation of the agency's automatic information system. So are you relying on the requirement of the statutory requirement that there be a search then?
Yes. I mean, as I said, it sounds like they didn't make a search at all. I mean, if they made an effort and they explained why it was too much of a problem, it could be different. But they just said from the get-go, we have this exemption, so we're not going to search at all.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll
Thank
take
you.
The case under submission. We'll call the next case.